The book of Judges is, I think, can be split up into four sections. We're going to be doing Judges and Ruth. So let's see, Joshua. So this is the seventh and eighth books of the Bible we're going to talk about today. And I would say that you probably split Judges up into three sections. The second section of which you have a piece of paper representing, and that is basically the chronology of the Judges. Now, I hope that you can see this and make sense of it. And if you look around and you see someone that does not have a copy, Mike, why don't we put whatever you have left back on the refreshment table? Also, I just want to say that... Okay, so about four sections in the book of Judges. You have the introduction, which is basically, looking at your piece of paper there, the first two chapters. Alright, basically chapters 1 and 2. And then you have this chronology of the Judges that takes place. And that's basically, again, observe, chapters 3 through 13. Now, that's not to say that the Judges are done. You might notice there's a particular judge I don't have listed here. His name is Samson. Samson was more of a nuisance than he was a conqueror. Samson is probably the best known of the judges, maybe Gideon, but Samson is kind of just a nuisance. We don't have any evidence in the book of Judges that the Israelites were free from the Philistines. If you want to make a note, you can make a note on the last line of that chart there that Samson was a judge for 20 years under the 40 years of the servitude of the Philistines. So the Philistines are ruling for 40 years, but they have this pain in the foot of a man named Samson who's making trouble for them. Samson really was just a pest. He really was such a loose and ill-disciplined man that he did not really bring peace to Israel. Just didn't. You read it for yourself. He killed more people in his death than he did in his life. And that kind of finishes chapter 16 of Judges. So if I were to say there's a third section, it would be Samson the Nuisance, basically, chapters 14 through 16. And then chapters 17 through 21, there's 21 chapters, right? Have I lost my mind since since yesterday? Yeah, 21 chapters. Basically, that is what we might call, political intrigue, all right? I am going to break that down in just a minute. So, really, when we talk about judges being about the judges, that's really only one-fourth of the content of the book. Not word count, but subject matter. So Samson is a big deal, but he's not really a good chapter in the life of the judges. You have the judges, and you can see in the center column there, the judges alternate with war and peace for 390 years. So it doesn't take a whole lot of math to figure out we're talking about a period of about 400 years. And that's if there's no overlaps. Okay? I'm making an assumption here, and I need you to hear me when I say this. The assumption is that none of these judges, nor none of these enemies of Israel, overlap. And how could they overlap? They could have geographical significance. That is to say that Othniel might have only been effective in one part of Israel. And the reason why that math needs to work is because, you may remember, 966 B.C. is our date for Solomon's temple. And so, somehow, you might remember, how many years, for some of you have been reading your Bible for a year or two, how many years did Solomon reign? Anyone remember? 40 years. Solomon reigned for 40 years in Israel, okay? And so, since this was the fourth year of his reign, he started reigning in 970 B.C. Does anyone know how long David reigned? This is really hard.
40 years.
So all of a sudden, we know that David's reign began in Hebron at 1010 B.C. Does anyone know how long Saul reigned? 40 years. So 1050 B.C. is when Israel got a king. So when you have 1446 B.C. coming out of Egypt, and you have a 1010 B.C. reign of Saul, and Saul, the first king of Israel, is not in the book of Judges, right away you see that there's probably some overlapping in this 390 years. Because what we haven't talked about yet is the years of the conquest. You add on to the years of the wandering in the wilderness. So if the years of the wandering in the wilderness are 40 years, there's a lot of 40s happening here, then it's 1406 B.C., add the years of the conquest, if that took 20 or 30 years, and then you realize you don't have 390 years of just direct one after another chronology. So there is probably some overlap, because you have to get from about 1380 BC to about 1050 BC. So you're really looking at about 300 years altogether that the book of Judges covers. About 300 years. Again, if you use this as your staple, the usual secular date given to the years of, to the building of Solomon's temple, then just a little easy math that we've been covering in here. If anything that I just said in the last 5 minutes, when it comes to these numbers, is unclear, it's really simple. You just got to ask me to repeat it, okay? And if we don't have time in this class, I'll do it in an email or a podcast. All right. So, I want you to notice the third line, servitude under Moab. Servitude under Moab. And then you might notice that Israel served the Moabite king for 18 years. Moab could probably be easily identified today as modern-day Jordan. Okay? Jordan. Now, why I want you to pay attention to this is because of that line underneath servitude to Moab. Rest under Ehud. Does anyone remember anything about Ehud the judge? Left-handed. Who said that? Yes, he's left-handed. We love left-handers. Two of our three kids are left-handed. My dad's left-handed. My grandfather's left-handed. But none of us are judges of Israel, so I don't know what that has to do with anything other than we like left-handed people. And you might remember that he snuck a dagger into the parlor of what king? Eglon. Yes. And he lost his entire toolbox in that dude's gut. You remember that? Yeah, that's a great, I mean, you need to check. If you've never heard of the guy who lost his sword in a king's belly, you need to read that story right there in Judges chapter 3. It's fantastic. All right. So, now, having said that, if you want to, if you have a pen, you should probably put right in that line, rest under Ehud, you should probably put the book of Ruth happens right here. Okay? Book of Ruth. Now, we're going to come back to the Judges. Let's just take our time and just turn through the Judges and notice all the chapter headings in the book of Judges. We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. You might notice in chapter 3, verse 31, there's this dude named Shamgar who kills 600 men with a giant toothpick. An ox goad. All right? That's pretty cool. I mean, I'm all right with that. 600 men with a toothpick. All right, and just keep on turning. You might notice Jephthah, chapter 11. He's kind of a strange guy. He made a promise that he would sacrifice whatever came through his door on his way home after a military conquest, and out came his daughter. You might check that story out later. That's chapter 11 and 12. So anyway, let's look at the book of Ruth. Why am I going this way with you? Why such a space shuttle view of Judges and Ruth? Well, because I want to get us to think a little bit about where these books fall on the timeline. All right, we're in Ruth chapter number 1. Ruth chapter number 1. Ruth is one of the two books of the Bible that bears the name of a woman. What's the other one? Esther. Good. All right, so verse 1. We already, by the way, taught through this. I think we did it in 9 weeks. I'll send that out to you later this week in our email if you need the link to that. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. Oh, well, that should narrow it down pretty good there, right? We at least know what book of the Bible we're putting Ruth in the middle of. All right? So we know it's after Joshua kicks the bucket, right? Cashes in his chips, is gathered to his own people, whichever phrase you'd like to adopt. And it's before what? Before kings, Josie says. Which king was the first king? So right away, you know Ruth happened somewhere after Joshua and before Saul. Just like that. Figured it out. So you know that somewhere in the late, you know, the 1000 to 1300 BC range. You right there, you're golden. Just by remembering the Exodus is about 1450 and Solomon's temple is about 970. You know that you have to subtract 40 years for David's reign, 40 years for Saul's reign. It has to fit between there. That's the time of your judges. Okay? So, everyone with me so far? So really the question ought to be, how did you narrow it down to that period under the rest of Moab? Okay, here's why. Let's keep reading. Verse number 1. A certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. All right, what would you expect if it were any other period than the rest with Moab? Here's this man. He's traveling from a town called Bethlehem, Judah. He's traveling to Moab. Yeah, he probably would have been slaughtered. Is this, there appears to be free travel between these two countries. Okay? So as we look and we see that you have this man who's able to travel between two countries and they're not fighting, well, then that's why a lot of people think that this happens in that period under the rest of Moab. They're in the fourth line. Rest under Ehud with Moab. So that is in chapter 3, verse 30, when they gain rest with Moab. So I'm not alone in this. There are some people that think this. By the way, if you were to go to this bookstore right on the other side of this wall, I don't think many people go there to get books. But let's just talk for just a moment about a particular kind of book that helps us answer these questions. It is called a survey, okay? An Old Testament or New Testament survey. That's what those books do. They give you overviews of the books of the Bible. A commentary is not a survey. A commentary is basically takes you through a book and tells you what verses mean. And a survey says, let's look at all the books of the Bible. Let's tell you who the author was, when it was written. So there, when you look on a shelf at an antique store or at a bookstore or at a used bookstore, and you're like, a survey, that sounds boring. Well, it might be, but the purpose of it is to give you an overview of the books of the Bible, okay? So, we know that the book of Ruth was written during the time of the book of Judges. We think the story occurred during the time, or at least one of the times, when they had rest with Moab. Yes, sir?
Just going back to that, the survey, is Haley's?
Okay, then you have Bible handbooks. Yeah, Haley's Bible Handbook, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Bible handbooks work a lot like surveys, but the Bible handbook is usually a somewhere between a survey and a commentary, whereas a commentary will get you right on down in the weeds to say, here's what this word means in this verse. A Bible handbook usually shows you, here's Judges, here's what the author is, here's what they're doing, here's an overview, and here's how it works with the other books of the Bible. Typically, that's what a Bible handbook does, okay? And those are usable. But I do need to remind you in this room that it's much cheaper to not buy a book that you're not going to read. Okay? It really is. You can save a lot of money just shaking off the emotionalism of something. Ooh, a new book. That means I'll read my Bible a lot this year. No, it doesn't. Okay? So the book of Judges. Let's talk quickly about the theme of the book of Judges. As you read through the book of Judges, you should know over and over in the book of Judges that says every man did what was right in his own eyes. If you would like there to be an example, here we are, first chapter of Ruth, look at the very last verse of the book of Judges. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. All right, you help me. When was this book of Judges finished? Based on what we just read.
When there became a king in Israel.
When was it finished? When was the last words of this book written? We know something for sure.
Before Solomon.
Well, if he says that there was a day when there was no king in Israel, that means it was written when there was a king in Israel. So we know the book was finished sometime after King Saul began to reign. Otherwise, what's the point of saying it? Hey, everyone, if you go out in the parking lot today, you will not find a DeLorean. Well, no one's expecting to find a DeLorean in our parking lot. Okay, so you have to probably wonder, why is he saying this in the last verse of the book of Judges? The reason he's saying it is because he's writing it during a time, whoever the writer is, we're not that far yet, he's writing it during a time when there was a king. In other words, once upon a time, in a galaxy far, far away, there was a time when we had no king. And everyone did what was right in their own eyes. That kind of idea. So all through the book of Judges, you have these cycles where people disobey God. God whips their hind ends by putting them under the servitude of other countries. Notice your chart. The Mesopotamians, the Moabites, the Canaanites, the Midianites, the Philistines, and the Philistines. Okay? And oddly enough, God hears their cry and rescues them almost every cycle. That's what you need to get from the book of Judges. It is a bridge between conquest under Joshua and kingship under Saul. It's a bridge. But we can get even more specific than that. If you look, and we'll talk about what Ruth is about in just a moment. As you look towards the end of the book of Ruth, and it's a stout one-page turn. All right? But as you look towards the end of the book of Ruth, what are some hints that something has occurred in Israel's history? What are some things that have occurred? You might notice that there is in verse 17, a child being born, verse 16, Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, became a nurse to him. The neighbor women gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi. They called his name Obed. So understand this. The book of Ruth is an entire story of childlessness and death leading to the birth of this kid, Obed. That's what it's about. How do we get Obed? But that is the very micro story. The macro story tells us this book was written much later than Obed's birth. What's the clue? Who's the last person we have mentioned?
David.
Remember how long King Saul reigned before David took over? 40 years. So we know we are at least 40 years past the judges into the era of the kings when Ruth is finished. So we know that Ruth wasn't finished at least until how many generations after Obed? Well, Jesse's one. And let's see here. Oh, they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now, here's the strange thing about this genealogy. It not only reaches forward to David, it reaches backward to who?
Perez.
Yes, and who was Perez's father? You might remember, Perez had a twin named... Well, it's Matthew 1. I forgot it. In the world did that escape me already? How silly of me. Zerah. Yep. Perez and Zerah. Does anyone remember who their daddy was?
Judah.
Remember, Judah found his widowed daughter-in-law. And she was masquerading as a woman of the street. Do you remember that? Okay. And so this genealogy begins with Judah of the house of Israel and ends with David, king of Israel. So, the thing is, what does Ruth do? It sets us right in the middle of the book of Judges. There must be a reason why we're talking about how King David got here. Okay? Think through this now. This is not Bible for idiots. We've really got to think through this. This is the purpose of this class, is that at the end of the year, you're like, okay, I don't feel like I'm in the dark when we talk about the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth, if you can picture this as the book of Judges, it is a bridge between the Exodus or the conquest of Israel after the Exodus and the age of the kings. And Ruth is right there in chapter 3. And its purpose is to show us how we got King David from Judah. All right? Don't forget that. Why does that matter? Who cares? Yeah. Yeah, who is Jesus? The son of David. It really matters that we know how David got here, right? Other than saying he came from his mom. There are better answers than that, okay? We want to know. We want to. Anywho. All right, so. All right, again, Ruth starts out horribly. You have this man named Elimelech. You can see in chapter 1, verse 1. A man named Elimelech and his wife Naomi, and they have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and they go to, and there's a famine in Bethlehem, which is funny because Bethlehem means house of bread. So they leave this place that means you can find plenty of bread here. They leave it because you couldn't find any bread there. And they go to Moab. Apparently it was peaceful because they could go peacefully to that country. We know this. And then for the next 10 years, there's barrenness and death. And before you know it, you have three widows instead of three men who are leading the story. Naomi, the mother-in-law, and two daughters-in-law who are Moabites. So all of a sudden we realize that King David is somehow, by the end of the book, going to have in his grand parentage, his ancestry, a non-Jew. Okay, which will make the second one in the genealogy. Who is the first one in the genealogy at the end of the book of Ruth? Okay, so there are three. Thank you. There are three. And how do we know there are three? Is Rahab mentioned in the one in the book of Ruth? No, but tradition says that Nahshon, that dude in verse number 20, was the one, or forgive me, Salmon. I know it's Salmon, right? Verse 20. Nahshon or Salmon were the ones who was one of them that married Rahab. So anyway, in the book of Matthew, this genealogy is repeated and tells us how Jesus got here and Rahab is in it. So who's the third then non-Jewish woman in Jesus in David's genealogy? Not even Jesus' genealogy yet. Let's say David in David's genealogy. You have Rahab, the one from Jericho. You have Ruth, the one from Moab. And who is the other one? We already mentioned her. I don't think so. Do you remember from our study in Genesis, chapter 38, Tamar, the daughter-in-law of Judah, she was a woman of Canaan. So we have three mentioned. And then by the time you get to Matthew, you have a fourth woman mentioned who is in the genealogy of Jesus. It's the only genealogy in the whole Bible where there are women mentioned. It's Jesus' genealogy in the book of Matthew. There are five women mentioned. One of them is his mom. Okay? And she's the only Hebrew in the entire genealogy. You have this Tamar, the wife of Judah, daughter-in-law and wife of Judah. That's a funny song. All right, and she's a Canaanite. You have Rahab. She's from Jericho. She's a Canaanite. You have Ruth. She's from Moab. It'd be better if she was a Canaanite. Remember the last one that's mentioned in the genealogy is this wife of a Hittite who David steals. And her name is Bathsheba. So you have Canaanite, Canaanite, Moabite, Hittite in the lineage of Jesus. And the first three are found right here in the book of Ruth, in Ruth's genealogy. Whew. Any questions so far? All right, let's rehearse. The book of Judges gives us the bridge between the time of Joshua and the conquest and the time of Saul and the kings. The book of Ruth is set in the middle of there to tell us how David's line makes its way through the times of the judges. Okay? All right. Well, that was easy. Now, who wrote it? No, it was not easy for me, brother. Not at all. I know. I've been thinking about it for 7 days. How in the world do I make this matter? All right. So, who wrote it? We've got all kinds of great guesses. Your study Bible probably gives you the top seven guesses. Who wrote it? Yeah, we have some good guesses for Samuel. So here's what I'm going to do. For the next 10 minutes, I'm going to do an effective job of kicking the can down the road. And I'm going to tell you that the writer of 1 and 2 Samuel is the writer of Judges and Ruth. But what I'm not going to tell you today is who wrote 1 and 2 Samuel. Now flip the page over. You might notice, just for your learning, in case you didn't know, that is how the books of history run through, how they follow one another. Judges through 2 Kings are basically chronological in their nature. As a matter of fact, 1 and 2 Kings cover pretty much all the kings in both kingdoms of Israel and Judah. 1 and 2 Chronicles run parallel with 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and they cover basically just the kings of Judah. Now listen, don't get discouraged. If you're not following much of what I'm saying, that's introductory. I just want you to catch a few things. These are for the people that have been reading their Bibles for a decade. In case you didn't know, those run parallel. Now let's get you on back. In the original Hebrew Bible, 1 and 2 Samuel were one book. Okay? They weren't divided. So 1 and 2 Samuel were one book. It was called the first book of the kings. Isn't that nice? All right. And 1 and 2 Kings were the same, were one book, and they were called 2 Kings. How unfortunate. So we're going to stay with our titles of the books, but what I want you to see is this very, very logical statement. The author or authors of 2 Samuel are the same as the author or authors of 1 Samuel. That's simple because they used to be the same book, right? They used to be one book. All right. So I'm going to take it one step further, and then I'm going to show you why I believe what I believe about this. The author of the book of Samuel, the author or authors of the book of Samuel, are the same authors as the books of the author of the books of Judges and Ruth. Okay? It's hard. Kind of tough. So, 1 Samuel starts out with the last judge. Who is it? You want to take a look at the first couple pages of the book of Samuel. Who is it? The last judge. Samuel. Yeah, great. Born in chapter 2 and goes to live with Eli at the tabernacle in chapter 3 in Shiloh. By this time, if you say temple in Jerusalem, you're too early. It's not there yet. The king doesn't own the tabernacle place yet on the top of the Mount Moriah. He doesn't own it yet. You'll enjoy that as you read through it. King David gets that place where the temple will be built. He buys it from a guy. It hasn't happened yet. There is no temple yet. They don't own Jerusalem yet. Okay? Right now, there's a threshing floor there in this history. It's owned by a guy named Aruna. And by the end of the second book of Samuel, pretty much, David owns it. And there'll be a temple built there. But not by David. By who? Solomon. Right. So, the question is, how does 1 Samuel end? So I'm going to take a look at the last chapter and tell me how 1 Samuel ends. Saul dies. All of a sudden, we have covered all of Saul and all of Samuel in 1 Samuel. So if you want to know where you can find Samuel and Saul, 1 Samuel. Okay? 2 Samuel starts out with David's rule. But David doesn't rule all of Israel right away. He only rules part of Israel. He rules for 40 years total, but only 33 years over both Israel and Judah. He rules 7 years first over just Judah in a town called Hebron, which is great. There's so much that happens in the book of Genesis at Hebron. Abraham and David walked around in the same places 500 years, 600 years, 700 years apart from each other. Fantastic. So much to learn there. All right. 2 Samuel ends with David's declining kingdom. Okay. So if you want to say, what does 2 Samuel cover? David. But that's not what we're teaching today. But I do want you to think about the first couple chapters of the book of 2 Samuel. There is this guy who is a son of Saul who is absolutely sold that he needs to be the next king after his dad. If you look at the first couple chapters of 2 Samuel, what do you suppose his name is? If you look at the first couple chapters of 2 Samuel, look at some headings. David is not the son of Saul. He's a different house, and that is exactly what we're heading towards. I'm glad someone said that. Ish-bosheth. Wow. Bill is just a much better name. It is. Ish-bosheth. Yes. Son of Phosheth or man of Phosheth. That would, you know, it's like Judas Ish-Kerioth. That means he's a man from Kerioth. There's nothing really deep there. So Ish-bosheth is a son of Saul, and he wants to rule, and he does for about 7 years. Now, having just said that, think with me for just a moment. Saul and David are from two different families. Saul is from what family? Benjamites. Who said that? Thank you. It's from Benjamites. Good job, Mike Manis. There's like 17 mics in here, so I had to see your last name too. So, Benjamites. So remember, there are 12 sons of Israel. Y'all still with me? This is hard, I know, but that's why we're recording it, so I can upload it. There are 12 sons of Jacob. Two of their names are Benjamin and Judah. Y'all with me? David is from which tribe? Judah. Saul is from which tribe? So 2 Samuel begins with a feud between two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. Okay? 1 Samuel ends with a problem between two tribes, Because Saul, the son of Benjamin, is still alive and reigning. And he is pursuing David for a long time. Now, how long? Well, when David defeated Goliath in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, he was so young that King Saul made fun of his acne. Ruddy. Young and ruddy. And we're told in 2 Samuel that David was 30 years old when he began to reign over Hebron. So, his kingdom ends when he's 70. It begins when he's 30. About 15 years or so, David is running from Saul. There is a feud between, now you add that 15 years to the end of Saul's life, and the first 7 years after Saul dies with the son of Saul, Ishbosheth, you have about 20 years, we'll say 20 years, of feuding between the houses of Benjamin and... Thank you. I still have about a third of you. That's fantastic. Wonderful. All right, this is important. I'm not doing any of this on accident. And if you don't have your Bible in here, you're struggling at a great disadvantage. Okay? So, you have this struggle between Benjamin and Judah. It's very much alive in 2 Samuel. It's very much alive in 1 Samuel. Now then, look at 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter number 17. I'm going to read this verse with you. We're going to talk about it in a minute. Then I'm going to tell you a strange coincidence. 1 Samuel 17, and in this chapter, you will find the battle between David and Goliath. Okay? Look at verse 12. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, who had 8 sons, and the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. David was the son of a man from where? Come on, a little louder. Bethlehem, Judah. Bethlehem, Judah is hyphenated. It's two words buttressed up against one another in the Hebrew language. It's only found here in the book of 1 Samuel. It's only found here in the book of 1 and 2 Samuel. It's only here, other than two other books in the entire Old Testament. You are right on it. Other than Judges and Ruth. So, you have this political unraveling, this rivalry between Benjamin and Judah that begins in this chapter in 1 Samuel. Now, if you're reading 1 Samuel, now let's do it even better than that. If you're writing 1 Samuel, and you want your reader to understand, where in the world did Jesse come from? Then you're going to write some additional material to help the reader. Now then, we already know Ruth has the challenge of telling us, where did David come from? And where does Ruth begin? Let's look at the first chapter of Ruth. You've got to move your pages quickly. Keep those things nimble. You've got to get some finger treadmills going on up in here. Maybe we can market that. Get your fingers moving more nimbly. It is kind of chilly here, though, to be honest. And I'm not sure about those fingerless gloves some of those ladies are using back there. I saw those on the way in. I wasn't sure what purpose. Carrie, hold up your fingerless gloves back there. I don't understand that. Usually it's my fingertips that get cold, but she has gloves without. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. All right, so look at the book of Ruth. Look at the first verse. Where does the story begin? Please, someone tell me. Bethlehem, Judah. All right, and you might notice, please, look at verse number 19, and you're going to see where the story eventually ends. Look, where does it say? Bethlehem, which is Bethlehem, Judah. So there's this place in the plot of land given to the Judahites known as, get this now, Judah. All right? And in this plot, this territory, there is a town called Bethlehem. David is born there to a man named Jesse and his wife. Jesse did not give birth to David. That hasn't happened, I don't think, ever. All right? So, think through this now. We know this man, by the end of the book, we know where he comes from, Bethlehem, Judah. It then becomes known as the city of David. Bethlehem, Judah becomes known as the city of David. Why? Because David is born there to a man named Jesse and his wife. Right? With me so far. It is therefore known as the city of David. In Luke 2, who is born in the city of David? Jesus, the son of David, is born in the city of David, Bethlehem, but it's not known as Bethlehem, Judah. That is something particular only to the author of 1 Samuel and the author of Judges and Ruth. Clearly, we have Judges and Ruth being the... Wait a minute, I got to back up and tell you how we all got here. Before he tells you about this David who's going to take the kingship of Israel. Judges gives us the needed history, but not enough. It doesn't give us a specific enough history. We need the book of Ruth. So Judges tells us what's going on to get us to King David, and Ruth tells us how the line of David made it through the time of the Judges. And we don't need either book until we get to the story of David in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now, let's talk about this section right here. Chapter 17 through 21 of Judges. Look at that with me, please. This has got to be the most grotesque story in the entire Bible. The term Bethlehem, Judah is not used in the book of Judges until this chapter. Chapter 17. After this, it is used 6 times in this book. The author wants you to know something about this town called Bethlehem, Judah, but that's not all he wants you to know about. Look at chapter 17. There was, verse 1. There was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. Now, here's the story. Micah and his mom want to have a place to worship in their house. They're in the mountains of Ephraim. Look at chapter 17, verse 5. Look at the end of the verse. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, you know right away, it's probably an author of Samuel or Kings that wrote Judges. Because they wrote about the kings. All right, look at verse 7. Now, there was a young man from Bethlehem, Judah, of the family of Judah. But he was a Levite and was staying there. The man departed from the city of Bethlehem, Judah, to stay wherever he could find a place. And he came to the mountains of Ephraim. Verse 9. Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" He said to him, "I am a Levite from Bethlehem, Judah." All right, right away, you have this idea of Bethlehem, Judah. And now we have a story of a man who lives in the mountains of Ephraim named Micah. One is to be building a shrine. The other is a Levite. What do Levites do in Israel? They're priests. So Micah needs his own priest to work in his shrine. All right? He's going to tell God how to work his religion. Okay? And so we have this man from Bethlehem, Judah, who's a Levite. He's qualified to work in a temple. Well, we look at chapter 18. In those days, there was no king in Israel. I'm getting the idea they want us to know there's no king in Israel. And in those days, the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for itself to dwell in. For until that day, their inheritance among the tribes of Israel had not fallen to them. So right away, you found something else out about when this was written. Now think through this. We know it was written during the time of the kings, but the story takes place when? What era? During the era of the conquest. You can take this story and shove it back in the time of Joshua, the book. Now look, all I'm trying to get you to do, am I trying to get you to remember everything I say in here? No, I'm trying to get you to slow down when you read. This is good stuff. So until then, they had not come into their inheritance. The conquest was not concluded during this story. So even though it is in the book of Judges, it doesn't happen during the time of the Judges. Okay? It happens during the time of Joshua. But the author of Judges said you needed to know something that was not covered in the book of Joshua. All right? Verse 2. So the children of Dan sent 5 men of their family from territory, men of valor. So here come these men. These men of Dan. Dan is not a popular tribe. All right? So now so far we have all kinds of strange things happening. We have these men of Dan, and what do they do later in the chapter? They steal this priest from this man living in the mountains. The priest is from Bethlehem, Judah. Everyone with me so far? All right. What happens in chapter 19? Look at verse 1. It came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel. I'm seeing a pattern here. That there was a certain Levite staying in the remote mountains of Ephraim. Okay, we've already been told this. He took for himself a concubine from Bethlehem, Judah. But his concubine played the harlot against him and went away from him to her father's house at Bethlehem, Judah. And was there about 4 whole months. Was there 4 whole months. Now, I just want you to see something, please. Look at verse number 10. The man goes back, by the way, to Bethlehem, Judah, gets his concubine. And I told the seventh graders, that's kind of like a lesser wife. Let's not get hung up with what a concubine is. Just yet, okay? That's how I teach seventh graders. I beat around the bush. Okay. So the man goes back to his concubine's father's house and gets his concubine from his concubine's father's house in Bethlehem, Judah. And they want to come and they want to stay in Jerusalem, verse 10. But they decide, no, we're going to continue on. Instead, listen to this now. In verse 12, his master said to him, we will not turn aside here into the city of foreigners who are not of the children of Israel. We'll go to Gibeah. All right. So right away, you get from that verse, the people of Gibeah are not foreigners, they are people of Israel. Let's find out what kind of people they are. Verse 13. So he said to his servant, come, let's draw near to one of these places and spend the night in Gibeah or in Ramah. And they passed by and went their way, and the sun went down on them near Gibeah, which belongs to
Benjamin.
Oh, so now we have someone from Benjamin, Judah, looking for a refuge, forgive me, Bethlehem, Judah, looking for refuge in a town of the Benjamites. All right. And verse 18. So he said to them, we are passing from Bethlehem and Judah toward the remote mountains of Ephraim. All right. So what happens when they go down to Gibeah? Verse 22. Here's what happens. It's basically Sodom and Gomorrah all over again. Brother Dick, my goal is for you to be back up here in 2 minutes. OK, so you have the men of the city of Gibeah. What tribe are they? Come on, help me out for it. Benjamin. They're from the tribe of Benjamin. They're surrounding the city. They want the man from Bethlehem, Judah to come out for what reason? Look at verse number 22. They want to know him. These Benjamites, they want to sodomize the guest from Bethlehem, Judah. Are y'all with me? Now remember what we had in 1 and 2 Samuel. We had this faction going on between Bethlehem, Judah and Benjamin. 2 Samuel, what do we have? Bethlehem, Judah versus Benjamin. We have to know, who can we trust if we're one of the subjects in Israel? We have to know. By the way, the end of the story is basically they get the man's concubine instead and they gang rape her all night and she dies. Yeah. And the man cuts her up in 12 pieces and sends a piece to each tribe, and they come and kill almost all the males from the tribe of Benjamin. So, if you wanted to know, who can I trust, and you had a, listen now, work this with me. If I'm writing to you about, you have to pick between Ishbosheth and David, or earlier, Saul and David. One is from Benjamin, one is Bethlehem, Judah, and I want to express to you that one of the tribes is very inhospitable and one of them is incredibly hospitable, then I need to give you a backdrop. So again, if I'm only using Bethlehem, Judah in 3 books, that should make the Bible student say, why just those 3 books? And we looked that there is a political purpose behind the writing of Judges and the writing of Ruth. One prophet wants the people of Israel to pick wisely. And he ends the book of Judges with a story that is enough to turn your stomach. Benjamites do horrible and horrific things. That's what you're supposed to come out of the book knowing. And they need to be wiped out. So, I'm kicking the can down the road. I am telling you that I think that the author of the book of Judges and Ruth is the author of the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. Now, who is it? The authors of the book of 1 and 2 Samuel. And when we get to that, well, we'll cover that. Go ahead. Right. I want to say that again, because not everyone knows the New Testament parallel you're making. There is another Saul in the New Testament, and he is also from the tribe of Benjamin. And his name is, later on after he's converted, he's known as Paul, the apostle. And if, by the way, the book of Judges ends with a scheme to make sure that the tribe of Benjamin is carried on, because there are almost no women left from the tribe of Benjamin, because they were all killed in the warfare. And there's like 400 men of the tribe of Benjamin, and that's it. And if the rest of the tribes of Israel don't help Benjamin keep living on, then the tribe of Benjamin doesn't live on, and we don't get the Apostle Paul. All right? So there is so much in both the small and the big picture. And if you, hopefully you caught some of it. Hopefully you did. And I'll have this uploaded today. If you have more questions or you need something further clarified, please.